Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hey friends, it's Diane here at Someone Gets Me, and today's interview is going to be really fun. I have a gentleman with me that when I first met him, he was actually dating one of my friends. And the first thought I had when I met him was, wow, this guy's really cool. I didn't know anything about what he did, and I didn't know anything about him other than my intuition told me he was a good guy. Well, time has gone by, several years, and they're married, and they're really happy, and it's so exciting. So I was thinking about, I wanted somebody wonderful on the show for you to hear, and lo and behold, Joe's YouTube video popped up, and he's got a great YouTube channel. You're going to hear about it. And it hit me that he's the perfect guest. So I'm so grateful that Joe Rady said yes. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Well, thank you, Diane. Thank you for that little intro, and it's really exciting to be here.
Oh, it's awesome. Now, Joe and his beautiful wife, Lori, live in Clearwater, Florida, not too far from me, and he has created an amazing YouTube following. But before we get to YouTube, Joe, could you talk to us a little bit about who you are, like your childhood a little bit, how you got where you are? I know you were a teacher at one point, and you have lots of other interests in the world. So what makes up your interesting character?
Sure. Well, I'm the oldest of six kids. I come from a large Italian family. Grew up mostly in Florida. I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York. And one thing that I always remember from my childhood and teenage years are cars. My father owned a mechanic shop for over 30 years. And every time we were going somewhere, it was either to go see cars or go to a car show, go to a car race, watching it on TV, and really just, my early years were just all about things that had engines. It's interesting because when I went off to college, because that was something that was very important because neither of my parents went to college. My father joined the Air Force and became a jet engine mechanic. And then once he got out, he opened his mechanic shop originally in Brooklyn. And then once when we moved down to Florida, he opened up a shop here. My mother, it was a blessing. She was a stay-at-home mom for us, and that really I felt was very important to how I was raised with having her readily available whenever there was an issue or a problem or I needed help. It's funny because when I went off to college, I tried to think of, I wanted to be an engineer, a mechanical engineer, and work with engines. And I remember my guidance counselor in high school told me that I may want to decide and do something else because my math grades weren't the highest and you needed a lot of math to be a mechanical engineer. So she asked me, well, what else interests me? And originally when I went to college, psychology and the mind was something that really fascinated me. I took a bunch of psychology classes in high school. I took them and enjoyed them and did well in them. So my goal was to be actually a geriatric psychologist to work with the elderly because I knew I wanted to live in Florida. And I was always fascinated by elderly people, especially history. To make a long story short, I wound up changing my career path after interning at some nursing homes. I just saw it wasn't for me. But one thing that I really enjoyed was talking to people and teaching people things. So that's when I kind of switched gears and decided to get a degree in education. So once I graduated from college, before I actually got into a classroom, I kind of followed a childhood dream of mine. I raced cars professionally for 3 years and got to travel all over the United States. I lived in Canada for about a year. And then there was a recession that hit in the year 2000, and I lost a lot of my sponsors. And then that's when I decided to hang up my helmet and pursue a teaching career, which I taught high school for just about 18 years.
Wow. What kind of cars did you race?
I basically was on the road to Indy cars. I was racing formula cars. So there's single seat where the driver sits in the center, engines behind you. And, you know, I started off racing in the southeast portion of the United States at a lot of tracks that my father took me when I was a kid, such as Daytona and Sebring, and rode Atlanta in Georgia. And then as I started winning more and more races, I kind of expanded to where then I was racing across the whole United States and even spent some time in Canada.
Wow. That I really love the idea that you were racing on the same tracks your dad took you to. Did you ever have kind of those moments of like reflection where you would just stand there and recall when you was a little boy?
Yeah.
How was that?
I think probably one of the biggest things I'll never forget is my first time I raced at Daytona. And the kind of cars that I race at Daytona, they don't just go around the actual oval that the stock cars, the NASCAR series races on. There's actually a road course that goes in the center. And I remember my family and friends were positioned in the stands in one of those corners down in what's called the infield section. And I'll never forget first practice session, rolling out of pit road. You're basically getting the engine up to temperature. You're warming up the tires. You're kind of just getting acquainted with everything that's going on. And I remember coming out of this right-hand turn, and I just glanced over where my family and friends were. And I remember seeing my dad. He wasn't up in the stands. He was down closer up against the fence, giving me a big, huge thumbs up. And it really hit me that I couldn't believe that I was on the other side of the fence as an actual participant instead of a spectator.
Oh, wow. I have goosebumps just hearing that and imagining the support from your family and how proud you must have felt and just like that awe, speechlessness, and oh my God, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. So were you able to concentrate that day when you were racing? Or were you
it's like once you put that helmet on and once that moment passed, what's funny is within another turn. So after that right-hand turn, there's a left-hand turn that actually brings you on to the banking of what is NASCAR turn one. So you're on, over 30 degrees worth of banking. And it was interesting because then the next moment I had was, oh my God, I'm on the turn here, and you're really sideways, and to have these cars flying past you, there was actually a moment of fear there for a few moments. And then once I came out of turn two, it all kind of just went deep within the recesses of my mind, and I focused on the goal at hand.
Oh, that's great. That's the sign though of a true champion and a true athlete, is to be able to keep really good control of your mind and pull it, like you said, from your recesses.
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever had a time back when you were racing cars where you, or maybe even since then, where overthinking or like mind chatter ever got in your way? And if so, what kinds of things did you do to help yourself? And I ask this question because it's the number one question my listeners from all 50 countries are always asking me to have my guests share about how to overcome, like when our brain is either overthinking or just trying to like get in our way.
Sure, definitely. For quite some time, every race event that came up was my first time being at that track as an actual race car driver. And even though I may have been there a million times as a spectator, you know, there were a constant flow of thoughts of having to learn the lay of the land, getting to figure out like, where do I go to check in to let them know that I'm here? Where am I going to be positioned in the garages and in the pits and all this? And there were so many times that you're just flooded with all of these thoughts that are just feeding into your anxiety. And what really worked for me a lot was to use some visualization. What I would do is once everything was set up, you know, my team was there and we had the car set up in the garage and everything, they were doing their thing. I would just get like a folding chair and kind of position myself somewhere away from everybody. And I would put some earplugs in and just try to slow all those thoughts down and actually visualize myself in the car, on the track, turning some laps before I even officially got onto the track. I would actually, going into an event weeks ahead of time, I would try to find some video footage that I would have recorded off of the television. Because back then, you know, this is 1998, internet still was not where it is at today, where you could just Google a racetrack and there's a video of onboard footage of that particular track. So what I would do is I would constantly be recording things on good old VHS tape from races that were being aired on TV of tracks that I knew I was going to go to ahead of time so that I could watch that onboard footage and use that imagery while I was doing the visualization process and deep breathing to slow all that down and to kind of gain focus on what the task was for that event.
Oh, that's impressive. So if you're wondering about how to use the visualization or what to do, you can rewind this episode and listen to Joe explain that again, because the visualization and being able to slow down and disconnect to be able to help yourself when your brain's going really fast, what he just shared with you was genius. It's the mark of a true athlete and a true champion to be able to answer that well. That's like perfect. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
So, okay, so your racing career continued, and then, of course, we ended up with interesting economic times here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And what drew you to teaching?
Well, you know, when I was originally going to college, that my freshman year, I knew I wanted to be a geriatric psychologist. That was what the goal was. And I knew that if I was to be a geriatric psychologist, I was going to need to go all the way and get my PhD. And one of those things that you kind of need to get into grad school are teacher recommendations. Obviously, in a lot of classes, I had about 100 students in those regular freshman classes. So I needed a way to stand out. So I would find out who these professors are, whether they were my own professors that taught psychology, different psychology classes, or were known for teaching around campus, and I would go and introduce myself and ask them if they needed any assistance in the classroom with their teaching, you know, whether it was there to help students or, you know, could be simple from making copies or whatever. And there were a few teachers that invited me into the classroom with them, and I just, it felt good to be in front of people, and if they needed help, to be able to help them. Whether it was to help get them focused on what the teacher was talking about, or sometimes the teacher was running late and he wanted me to start or she to start the class for them. So that's where I knew that there was just something about, you know, being in front of people and helping really, really kind of drove me to then say, hey, let me look into this teaching thing.
That's a great way to find it. You know, you're, and I tell my clients a lot, and you just explained it so perfectly how, you know, you take the step in the direction of what you think you want to do. Like in this case, geriatric psychology, you're going after mm-hmm. it. And along the way, all these great events happen and things happen. And if you're open, like you were, then you start seeing a bigger picture. And so you may not get to the geriatric psychology PhD, and you'll be led to something greater that's more amazing for you if you keep your eyes open. So that's mm-hmm. that's cool that you did that. I really like that story. So then what happened? So you started teaching.
So well, after the recession and the tech bubble burst in 2000, I hung up my helmet because I lost a bunch of sponsors. And what I learned a lot while I was racing cars was 90% of your time is actually looking for money to race. 10% was actually racing. So it was constantly having to cold call companies, try to get in touch with certain individuals that made decisions for organizations to try to get the sponsorship. And then once, you know, I worked so hard to build the budget for the season that once that tech bubble burst and the recession hit in 2000, a lot of my sponsors either totally went out of business and dried up, or they had to drastically reduce their marketing programs for the year. And that's where I was kind of stuck and did not have the funding to proceed. And that's when I said, you know what, I'm kind of burnt out on looking for money. There's something else I want to do here with my life. let me do the teaching thing, because I had the degree. That was what the plan was to first graduate from college, have the degree, and then give the racing thing a shot.
Okay. And so then you got your degree, and then what led you to teaching? Were you teaching here locally in Florida?
I was teaching, yes. So what happened was, it's kind of funny, because the year that the tech bubble burst and all that good stuff, there actually was a hiring freeze in Pinellas County, which is the county that I live in. So there was a hiring freeze for teachers. So I had to decide, okay, I can't work in Pinellas County. Where am I going to find a teaching job? So my choices obviously were going to be either Hillsborough or Pasco County. I did not want to go to Hillsborough. I just didn't want to risk working at a school in Tampa and having to make that commute every day. So I decided, let me try Pasco County. So I literally just called up the district office and said, hey, I have a teaching degree and I'm trying to look for a job as a teacher. What do I need to do? And there was, because I didn't even know the high schools that were in Pasco County, because I knew I wanted to be a high school teacher. I just did not know in Pasco County what were the schools that were available. So a person in the human resources department at Pasco County Schools said, why don't you give Ridgewood High School a call? They're really a great school and have a nice family atmosphere. Give them a call. So I gave them a call, and what happened was, is as wanting to be a social studies teacher, there's just not a lot of social studies positions open. Either someone would have to pass away, quit, or be fired. Plenty of reading teacher, you know, positions, math, language arts, all that kind of stuff. So what I did was, to get my foot in the door at this really good school known as Ridgewood High School, I actually taught what's called self-contained. So basically, I was teaching students that had severe learning disabilities and or severe behavior issues that did not allow them to function properly in a regular classroom.
That sounds very challenging.
Yes. The good news is that my psychology background definitely, because when the district found out I had a psychology background, they were like, listen, you might want to use that to get your foot in the door. And what was good was it was a good learning experience. I did it for the first 3 years of my career. I got to learn about all the different facets that involve teaching students with learning disabilities and whatnot, and to work with those students and be in that kind of environment. Switching over to the regular education students was a snap for me, but it was definitely, I'm glad that I was almost forced to do it because it taught me a lot about teaching and just children in general.
Wow, that sounds very intense. And so you obviously, from what you just said, found your way into a regular classroom after that. Were you teaching social studies or something else?
Yeah, I was still teaching social studies. So I taught the social studies in the self-contained class. The way it works is that the teachers actually rotate each period and the students stay in the classroom. So then once I transitioned out of there after 3 years, then yes, I was in regular ed. I was teaching U.S. history, psychology, and world history. And as some time went by, then I was given a request to start what's called the AP psychology program, which AP stands for Advanced Placement, which is basically a college level psychology course that is taught at the high school, that if the students at the end of the year pass the state test, then they would receive actual college credit for that class.
Oh, that's really fun. A lot of my gifted students that I work with are all in AP classes, so I'm very familiar with how all of that works. So during this time while you were teaching, and it sounds like you really had a lot of fun, and I'll bet the kids loved you because you have a great personality, was car still in your world? Were you doing anything with cars at the time, or you just still kind of,
you know,
where did that fit into your world, your vision?
It's fascinating because I'll be honest, after I hung up my helmet, it was very hard for me to transition from spectator to participant and then back to spectator. So I kind of was done. I was done with the whole idea of cars. I actually stepped away from cars for for quite some time and got into motorcycles. Because like I said, growing up, it was all about anything with an engine. So since I was, you know, living on my own and had my own place to live, growing up, I always wanted a motorcycle, but my parents said, no, that's not a possibility. But since I was living on my own, I figured, okay, now that I'm older, I'll go ahead and get a motorcycle. So for a few years, I actually made that really my vision and my drive, was riding motorcycles and being part of that group.
Oh, cool. What kind of motorcycles did you ride?
They were basically sport bikes. So they were the ones that, you know, have full body work on them usually are pretty quick.
You're reminding me of a time because I'm also a minister and I was asked to go to Virginia to do a wedding and to officiate a wedding for somebody that I know for a long time. And they all rode Harleys. And so I was taken to the church or the venue to do the wedding on the back of a Harley and then all of this stuff. And I love motorcycles.
There you go.
And I had all these motorcycle escorts everywhere I drove in the area for the whole week and everything. And it was so great. And it was like, it was one of those things. People are like, you weren't afraid? No. I'm like, no, are you kidding me? We're out in the hills in Virginia riding in the night.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
It was gorgeous. And you just brought back all of those memories. I'm like, oh, yeah, I love that stuff. That's really fun. It's just there's nothing like it.
Yeah, definitely.
In my world. Okay, so you were into the motorcycles more while you were teaching than the cars thing.
It kind of went in and out. So, you know, it was great because my dad got back into riding because up in New York, he used to ride motorcycles. After I got my motorcycle, he kind of got back into it. And it was nice to be able to share that experience with him and ride motorcycles together. And then what wound up happening was it almost seemed like a lot of events were happening around me that were telling me that maybe I need to get off of a motorcycle. I had a lot of friends that were having accidents and just overall, I wasn't feeling good. Because I basically, when I would ride a motorcycle, it was just for pure riding enjoyment. I would only ride on Saturdays and Sundays. I wouldn't use it as, you know, general transportation or anything like that. And I was just getting a uneasy feeling. So I after a couple of years, I sold my motorcycle and I got back into cars for a period of time. So it kind of was a little flip-flop for a little while between cars and motorcycles while I was teaching.
Oh, that's really great. And so, like you said, it's anything with an engine and anything that has that kind of vibe to it. And what excites me the most, and the reason why I even asked you that question was because sometimes people just put the thing they love, in this case, things with engines, aside. And like when you hung up the helmet from racing and you went to teaching, you didn't just say, no, I'm never going to have anything to do with anything with an engine again. I'm never going to really do cars or motorcycles. And you allowed that connection that you feel from the time you were a little boy to stay alive, even though it may not be how you were making your living, you didn't try to kill it.
Sure.
You know, so
yeah, there's no way I can. There's no way I can.
No, it's like in your DNA and that's just the way it is. So
yeah, exactly.
That's like me in sailboats. Like, you know, like you can't, the answer is like, no, you can't stop it. It's just,
no, yeah.
And so then you stopped teaching. What happened that you decided that you weren't going to be teaching anymore?
Well, it kind of was forced. I taught for almost 18 years. And I was loving what I was doing. It really grew. The psychology program grew. I started with just a class of 25 students. And by my final year teaching at Ridgewood, I had all five class periods. My full daily schedule was all AP psychology. I started with 25 students and I finished with 150. I had people lining up at the door to sign up for the class. And I also got into doing all the pep rallies, the different events, like the talent shows and hosting and being the MC for all those different things as well. So I actually was enjoying my career. And if you would have asked me back then, hey, Joe, would you want to ever leave teaching? I would have said no. There was no reason to.
Wow. So you were like really having a great time. And then what happened that you ended up not being able to teach anymore? Did the school close or something?
Yeah. So what happened was October of 2017, we were all called down. And when I say we all the faculty members were called down to have a meeting before school started. And then that's when we were told by our principal that the district had decided that at the end of the school year that they were going to close Ridgewood High School down, which that school had been opened since 1979. So actually long-standing school in the community was to be shut down.
Oh, that was shocking, I'm sure. Probably in shock and a really scary kind of sinking feeling. And so you all mm-hmm. had to live with this. The school was going to be closed down from October all the way till like May when school was out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how was that for you? Well, that just sounds hard.
It was probably some of the hardest years of my life, and definitely hardest years of my career. Cause, they did not have a plan in place for where we were going to go. We were basically told that we would need to go and look for a job at another school. We were going up against college graduates and everybody else. And we weren't given any kind of special treatment. Because I was a contracted teacher, I wasn't going to be without a job at the end of the school year. It could have came down to if I didn't find one on my own at a different school, then the district was going to place me anywhere that they felt that there was a need. So essentially, they could have put me at any school, middle school or high school, because that's what I was certified to teach. Social studies was grade 6 through 12. They could have put me anywhere in Pasco County. And since I live in Clearwater, if I was put out, say, at Zephyr Hills High School, I now have over about an hour drive commute to work every day, which just that would have been pure misery. So, yeah, it was bad for the kids, too, because another thing that a lot of people seem to have forgotten about the school is that we were what's known as a Title I school. So that means 80% of our students are on free and reduced lunch. They come from very low income households. And here are kids that on a daily basis lose a lot of things in their regular life at home. Now their school is literally being taken away. Like they were repainting the school because they were going to repurpose it after the school closed. They were going to repurpose it as something else. So they were literally painting walls and grinding our mascot off the floor in the cafeteria while the kids were still in school.
Oh, that's horrible. Oh man, that just makes my heart sink hearing about that. Like just no respect, like for the children or for all of you, for all the humans involved in it, you know?
Tell me about it.
Oh my God, that makes my heart sink. Oh, especially the kids deserve better than that. And as did all you guys, you know, you did something different because you didn't take a job at Zephyr Hills High School or somewhere even further away.
No, I did not.
That would be its own living hell. So is that where the YouTube channel started, or how did all this start coming about? I know I was one of the first subscribers because
yes, you were.
I was one of the first, and I'm laughing the whole time going, I like cars, but I don't know if I like them that much, but I really like Joe and I really like Lori. And you know, what's funny is like, you've converted me because I watch all the videos and
well, thank you.
And I'm like, I really like this. This is a really cool channel. And yeah, I've had friends of mine come up from behind me and go, what are you doing? Like, why am I watching cars? I go, it's Joe's channel. You should like subscribe to this. He like does a really good job. And then when you do other things where Lori's with you, it's just so fun, even for me, a non-car person. Well, I guess I could call myself more of a car person now. Anyway,
there you go.
I didn't start out that way. You've converted me. Tell us a little bit about the beginnings of this amazing experience. I just find it just really neat that your passion is back alive, greater than ever.
Yeah, it's really a dream come true. So basically, for the last 4 years of Lori and I's relationship, she was telling me for all that time, she would be saying, you need to start a YouTube channel, because we would go to car shows and Lori is great because she always wants to learn more. So, you know, even though she wasn't into cars when we first met, she knew that it was something that I was interested in. And because I was interested in it, she wanted to learn more herself. So we would go to car shows and she would always ask, well, why is this car important? What is that car over there? Tell me about that car. And, you know, I'm the type of person that, especially because I taught history, I love history. And I especially love, not only do I love the cars, but I also love the story behind so many of them because there's so many different fascinating stories. So I would tell her the story of, say, a Corvette or a Mustang or something like that. And what she always noticed was that people would gather around me, or around us, I should say, because she was standing with me, to kind of listen to what I was saying. Okay. And when I was done talking, she would point and say, "You see all these people listening to you? You need to do something with this." And I was like, "No, I'm not a YouTube person. I'm not into technology and all that kind of stuff." So originally, this all goes to Lori because she, for 4 years, was telling me that I should start this channel.
Well, the funny thing is I know Lori really well, and I know that she can be very relentless, kind of like a bulldog. When she grabs onto something, she only lets go to regrip. So I can only imagine her following her around for 4 years. So you finally acquiesced because there's a channel.
Well, yeah. Well, so what happened was I went to a local car event in the area, and I had a friend that has a Facebook page that he likes to talk about cars on his Facebook page. And he said, "Hey man, you know, you want to do a Facebook live video where you just walk around?" And, you know, cause he was always fascinated how I know so much about cars just off the top of my head. He goes, "Why don't you just walk around? I'll film you for my Facebook page and we'll see how it goes." I was like, "Okay." So he basically just had his phone and I did this little 9-minute walk around at the car show. And it was cool cause he showed me all the great comments that I was getting. And by the time I left the show, I was like, it felt so good to be doing that, even though it was in front of just, you know, a few thousand people that he had watching him on Facebook, that follow him on Facebook. It just felt amazing to be able to talk about cars and people actually liked what I was saying. So before I left that show, I literally told him, I said, "Listen, I'm going to start a YouTube channel. I'm going to do this." And I even had the name. The name just came to me, Rady's Rides. I said, I got the name. It's going to be Rady's Rides. So that day I went home and now I had an uphill battle of trying to figure out, well, how do you actually create a YouTube account? Because I didn't even have a YouTube account at the time.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so did Lori help you with that or you just figured it out?
And that was just one of those things where I don't even think she knew what I was doing right away. I kind of just was in the other room on the computer, just following the steps, you know, trying to figure out, well, how do I start this account? And once I got the account going, then the next thing was, well, what am I going to film? You know, how am I going to film? And it's interesting because the month that I started the channel was the same month and year, October of 2017, when they told us that the school was closing.
Wow.
Which I find really, you know, serendipitous. Yes. To have that happen.
That is serendipitous. I think there's no higher accident in that whatsoever. That was definitely led in that way. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And then what happened? I know I remember Lori asking all of us to support the channel. And so I did, and a few other people did. And so it's taken off though. Now you got like, what, 100,000 more than that people subscribing?
Yeah, it's a little bit over 120,000 subscribers now in less than 2 years.
So that is a stat not too many people can talk about. And I've watched all of your video. I've watched pretty much every video. So they went from they change over time. You have more and more technology in them and all these really cool intros. Mm-hmm. And sometimes Lori's with you and sometimes she's not. And you guys do really cool stuff. And it's really taken off in a lot of different ways. So what has been the inspiration to keep it going? Are you just that really cool at a creative content type of person, or are there people supporting the content you're doing, or how is this unfolding? Give us a flavor of behind the scenes of this, of
sure.
your creative genius. Cause it really is a genius show in my mind. So,
Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously when I first started the channel, it wasn't like, okay, I'm going to start this channel and eventually I'm going to quit my job teaching and do this full time. It was strictly just, I said to myself, I'm going to car shows. I like talking about cars. Let me just do it for fun. So I didn't want to go out and spend a bunch of money on equipment. I didn't think that there was any reason to, especially if I wasn't making any money at the time. So literally it was a $90 investment. I had an iPhone already. I had a pair of Apple AirPods. And the one thing that I bought for $90 was this device called a gimbal. And what the gimbal does is it stabilizes your image. So you put the phone in the gimbal and the gimbal holds it and you hold the gimbal and it allows you to move very smooth without any kind of, you know, herky jerkiness to the video recording. And it just so happened that one of my old students that graduated in 2014, him and I would always see him at the events every time that I would go, and we would always hang out and talk. And we talked a lot about cars when I was teaching. He would come by after school and we would always talk cars and whatnot. He was like, "Hey, do you want me to help you film?" And I'm like, sure. So I had to figure out, well, how do I put this into an actual thing to upload onto YouTube? Because there's a lot of ways that people do it. You know, they go to events and they kind of just hold the camera on themselves and they walk around, they talk and da 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 da. I go, what would be the best way for me to be able to host this information on YouTube? So that's when I came up with the idea, well, what I'll do is, each and every video, each car will be one complete video. So when him and I would go to, say, like a Cars and Coffee event in the morning, we would film. We would walk around. I would choose some cars, anywhere between 10 to 14 different cars. And what I would do is I would do what was called a quickie review, where I would just walk around the car and he would film me talking about the car, talking about the history, talking about, you know, that particular car. And by the end of that video clip, it would be about 4 to 6 minutes long. And I would always start it with, "Hey, this is Joe Rady from Rady's Rides." And I would always end it with, and these things just came to me. It's so unbelievable. Like my tagline, how I end every single review, where I say, "I'll see you on the next ride," that just came to me. And I just started saying it. So I had my intro and my close. And then I would just select different cars at random to talk about. And at first it was just that. And I did that for the first 7 months. I had a million channel views and it was all off of my iPhone and a $90 investment.
Oh, that is great. And I love that the intro and outro part, like just you, they naturally came to you. And because you say them so naturally, so it makes sense that it was naturally came to you. I'm like, gosh, he must have done a lot of rehearsing and everything. And then now that we're having this conversation, and you know, clearly you're using a lot of your intuition and your visionary type skills to use them, and they're so natural to you that maybe you didn't really appreciate as great as they are until now that they're really mm-hmm. working out amazing. It's like, wow, I really do have something going on here.
Yeah, it definitely surprised me. I didn't know I had this creativity and this sense of intuition to create these videos.
Yes, that's great. So that's a really good point for everybody who's listening, you know, because we have people all over the world and sometimes we're living our life and we have a skill and it's our biggest blind spot because it's so natural to us. We don't even realize we're using it until we get to see it in action. And mm-hmm. this is a really, really good example of it. And I think it's just fascinating. So what's your favorite episode? What was your favorite episode of all of them to do? Have you met anybody cool or did you drive a cool car that you're like, oh my God, I still like really dig that?
Well, one thing that's interesting that I think the listeners should know is since December 2017, so basically 2 months after I started the channel, I have posted a video every single day. Since December of 2017. So we have currently on the channel right now over 870 separate reviews. I think the one that really just sets them all apart is being able to, well, first of all, I was contacted by Honda and they wanted to fly me. They flew Lori and I out to Indianapolis Motor Speedway, not only to meet Mario Andretti, but also interview Mario Andretti. And then the day of the race, I actually got a ride in this special Honda Indy car race car that's been sort of stretched a little bit to where I'm sitting directly behind Mario, sort of like fighter plane cockpit style.
Wow.
And I was driven three laps around Indianapolis Motor Speedway by Mario Andretti.
Oh my God. How wonderful is that? Were you nervous interviewing him?
Yes, because you know, my channel is not, I really don't interview people. So it was kind of funny that actually at this event was the first time that I had to interview somebody, period. Mm. And it was interesting because the first two people was Mario Andretti. And then there was also another gentleman by the name of Alex Rossi, who won the Indianapolis 500 his rookie year. So I had these two big names that's how I was broken into to interviewing people. And it went well. It went amazing.
Oh, that is great. I remember seeing the pictures of you guys there. That's hilarious. I used to drive Hondas when I was younger, and I was working at this treatment center one time, and they told me that I was like an Andretti the way I drive.
There you go. Yeah, that's right.
And so every time I hear Mario Andretti's name, I'm like, yeah, they used to call me Diane Andretti.
That's right.
I'm like, uh-huh. Well, you know, hey, you got to get where you got to get. And at the time I was living in
Tampa.
That's right. It took a minute to get some places. You just had to drive efficiently, I said.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. I'll have to use that.
Yes, feel free to, because that's what I used to say. Well, it's about efficiency, and that's how this is going to play out. So just thought I'd let everyone know. So that is a really cool episode, and you got broken into interviewing people right mm-hmm. there on your show. This channel and your vision that was incubating, I think it was kind of incubating those years you were teaching, and
sure.
is just exploding in all kinds of ways that really has surprised you. So is this now like your full-time work? Is it taking up your full-time
time?
Yeah,
I'm very proud to say that as of July of this year, I officially retired from teaching. And now I do Radies Rides and the channel full-time. So it's truly a dream come true. And I never thought in a million years that my passion for cars would be able to make a living off of it.
Mm, that's wonderful. So now looking back, if we could stand here today and you look back over, you know, a little boy playing with his match cars and all of the experiences you've had, you know, if we could like run the movie forward and backward and we look mm-hmm. at it all and you stand here today and you're somebody who's actually living your vision. You're living a vision that's been in you since you were born and that's had all different kinds of roles in your life. If there's somebody listening to you and listening to your story and they're wondering about their vision, what would you tell them about going after their vision?
I would tell them to really listen. If they're having certain thoughts and they're motivated by something that they're passionate about, they really need to give it a serious listening to. And they gotta, you know, you gotta push that F word aside, fear. You know, the fear is so crippling. And that was something that over those 4 years, when Lori was telling me, you should do a YouTube channel. The only reason why I didn't actually listen was because of fear. It was either fear of being in front of a camera and putting myself out there for people to watch. There was also the fear, a big major fear of the technology side to it. Well, how do I do this? You know, I have so many people that contact me on a regular basis and they're saying, listen, I can't believe what you've done with your YouTube channel. I want to try this myself. What do I do? what do I need to go out and buy? And I tell them that you don't need to buy anything. You just need to get out there and start doing it. You know, whether it's getting in front of your phone and filming yourself, you know, whether it's starting, you know, a bakery company that you wanted. It's interesting because I would tell my students certain stories that I picked up along the way. And one story that really hit me was back in 2008. In 2008, we had that big housing crisis. We had the big recession going on, and a lot of people were losing their jobs left and right. And they couldn't find other jobs in that same field. There was a gentleman in Tampa who was an accountant for a company for almost 30 years, lost a job accounting, tried to find another job in that same field. Eventually he got to the point where he's like, to be honest with you, I don't even really like being an accountant anymore. So one thing that he always had a passion for was baking. And in his family, there was this recipe for these honey sweet buns. And he didn't have enough capital to start and open his own brick and mortar shop. So he came up with a very ingenious idea. Hey, let me go down to stores that already exist, get some shelf space, and then I'll just split some of the profits from the sales with these shop owners. Well, it got to the point where his buns were selling so great that he actually opened up his own shop and never had to go back to accounting ever again. And he was well in his late 50s. So that was one thing that definitely you're never too old to go after something that you're feeling that is you're being drawn to or moved to or something like that. So that's definitely some advice. Another one that I could give a piece of advice is be okay with getting help from people. You know, there are certain people that are going to come into your life. And I firmly believe that everything happens for a reason, and this universe is speaking to us in all different ways. And when there's somebody there that's willing to help, accept it, accept their help and let them help, because you can't do it. It's impossible to do just by yourself. From my standpoint, what I do, there's so much that Lori helps me with, and my cameraman, Tom, and everything else that, and then all the people who support. So it's one of those things that you gotta allow that passion to draw you and be open and willing and able and set all the expectations and fears aside.
Oh, you just nailed it. That's beautiful. I have goosebumps listening to you. I'm like more motivated for my things now. You know, it's like, really. It's true. It's completely true. And the receiving help part is so important, because we all have people around us that want to help, and sometimes we have to ask for it, and sometimes they offer it, and because of fear, we slow it down, or we stop, or we throw up the walls of resistance. And so those are really, really great messages. So on a personal note, what are some things that you enjoy for having fun? Like when you want to just go cut loose and have a good time, what do you do?
You know, I'm a pretty simple person. I mean, for the most part, it could be as easy as hopping in the car and going for a nice little drive and some roads that are in the area that are not, you know, used for regular travel, and you could kind of just get away from everybody. I love, you know, practicing yoga with Lori. That's something that she's brought into my life that I feel is so important, especially like when we talked about calming the thoughts in our mind and whatnot. So I have that avenue to go into, but I like spending time with the people I really care about and just doing things that are not like too over the top. I don't need to go out and have the craziest night ever. Just something simple, like a nice dinner and going out to a movie or, you know, going for a walk outside. But that's been the one of the biggest challenges with the channel, is telling myself that I need to stop for the day and I need to go out and do some of those things. Because sometimes it could be hard when you're trying to get the video, because, you know, besides actual filming, a lot of it I'm doing myself, the editing of the videos, the answering of the comments, things like that. And I have to set a time and say to myself, okay, I need to go and have some fun. Cause there's sometimes I'll just keep going. Which, you know, is not always a good thing. So, that's something that I've been working on time management wise is having that time to go have fun, because as a teacher for so long, my day was broken up for me. Every 50 minutes, I would have a different class period. When it's 2:15, it's time to go home. Whereas with this YouTube channel and being, you know, a small business owner, sometimes you're on 24/7, even when you shouldn't be.
Yes, that's a great point. You know, the boundaries of when you're running it yourself, and it you have to set your own boundaries, otherwise it can suck you up, and mm-hmm. pretty soon you're a slave to the very thing that was at once your passion, you know, and your vision.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what's the most memorable food you've eaten?
So when it comes to food, I think my favorite type of thing is I love tacos. Like, and I like authentic, real deal tacos. So there's a couple places locally that Lori and I love going to. We have one right by our house, and then there's one a little bit further away on Central Avenue in St. Pete. That just a nice row of tacos, nice, fresh, everything fresh is that's perfect to me. That sounds like a little piece of heaven to me.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. I have several people who've told me tacos. I should introduce all of you, and then we can have like a Someone Gets Me podcast reunion thing with tacos.
There you go.
That would be really, really fun. So I know we've covered a lot of things, and I'm just so fascinated, and I'm so excited for your journey that you've had so far, but like where it is all going. It's just very thrilling to take this time, and I so appreciate you taking this time to hang out and share with all of us this amazing journey you're on. So what do you see for the future?
It's unbelievable because, you know, when we were sitting just a year ago, we were about 12,000, 13,000 subscribers. And since then we're now over 120. What I envision is by the end of the year, next year for 2020, we will be easily at 250,000 to 300,000 subscribers. Lori will be working with me full time, doing all of the different things that need to get done to have Rady's Rides be functional. That would be a real great way to share that with her, because she has so many great ideas and she's so creative. And I just think just getting connected with more people. It's surprising because you would think because I'm filming myself and people are watching me either on their phone or their laptop or their TV, that there's this disconnect. What I have found in this whole journey is that I am now connected to more people and more connected to people than I ever have been. I have people that reach me from around the world and message me on my email or whatever, and they'll be like, listen, here's a real quick side story. You know, like I had this one gentleman reach out. He said that his son suffered from autism. It was very hard for him to sit still and ever watch a TV show with his dad and whatnot. But each day his son will sit down with his dad and watch Rady's Rides.
Oh.
Just the two of them. Just, yeah. So it's stuff like that where it's like, oh my God, it's like, not only am I here to be able to share my passion, my love for cars, but I'm actually helping a father and a son spend time together. You know, and another one is I just had another gentleman reach out to me. He lost his mother, and people tell me that, you know, while they're grieving, the channel gives them something to look forward to each day, because I do post every day. It gives them something to look forward to. So I just see myself helping more people, helping them reach dreams that they have, and to show them that, listen, I'm just a normal average person. And with this vision and with the focus and the help from others, I've been able to take myself out of a situation where I had no job at the end of the school year to now I'm now working for myself and I'm doing for myself.
That's very powerful. And you're helping people along the way in ways that you never imagined. I mean, who would figure a YouTube channel about cars would help an autistic son and his dad connect, or somebody grieving? Like, who, you wouldn't think that in the very beginning, yeah. But yet it's so true and it's so real.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's wild. So you have a YouTube channel, obviously, Rady's Rides. And so everybody, you can subscribe to that YouTube channel. I'm subscribed to it. I've been a fan since the beginning, like I've said earlier. And I suggest everybody do. We're going to put a link to that show in the show notes. So there's really going to be no excuse on that part of it. And I will put all the other links of how you can contact Joe and follow him and all of his amazing adventures. And you can go see his interview with Mario Andretti, and you can see himself with his amazing wife, Lori, and doing cool things. Joe's just a really great, talented person, as you've heard. So make sure that you support him and let him know you heard him on this show. So I have one last question for you. And that sure. is, if there was a billboard that we could create that the whole world would see, what would be your message that you would put on that billboard?
The message that I would put up is never give up. Never give up on yourself. Never give up on your dreams. Never give up on hope. And change can be a very, very, very good thing. Even at the start, when you first see it, it may not seem like it's a good thing, but it could wind up being the best thing that's ever happened to you.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's a great message for the billboard. So we've covered a lot. Is there anything that you were hoping to talk about or wanted to talk about that I've missed or that you would now want to share?
I think the, you know, all the main points, I would say, if anybody in particular is looking to start their own YouTube channel, you know, it just takes time, effort, and you just got to allow the process to happen. Some people, it you know, clicks a little faster. Others, it just takes a little bit of time, but you just need to get out and actually do it. And I think that it'll allow you to have that outlet, and then you just never know what that may spin off into, you know?
Exactly. And one of the things too that hits me with that is to tell people about it. Like, so many people create things and they don't tell anyone about it. Mm-hmm. And if you guys didn't put it on social media and Lori didn't email me and say, "Hey, Joe is doing this cool channel, check it out," I might not have seen it early enough, or I mean, I would have found it eventually, but I didn't know. I wouldn't have known that you guys desired my support if you didn't ask me for it.
You're right. You're right. You're right. And that's the thing, is we may sit there and say, "Oh, well, I'm just bothering people. If I put this out there asking them to subscribe or support me, then I'm just no, because like you said, a lot of times it's funny because we have all this technology that connects us, but sometimes things could get lost in the shuffle, and you just got to do the effort to let people know so that they go and do what you want them to do, have that call of action. And, you know, it was just crazy because January of 2018, we were barely at 1,000 subscribers. And that's when we were really pushing on social media to try to get to 1,000 subscribers. And now it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is stunning. And you have to be willing to tell people. It's funny because I just did a 3-day retreat. And at the end of the retreat, I told everyone about my new book coming out. It's called Where Do You Fit In? And I had a picture of the cover, the art and everything. And I said, if you want to pre-order it, then let me know. And I wasn't thinking much of it anyway or the other. And I've never really done a pre-order offer before, ever. I've just published a book and told everybody it was out. Every single person there bought at least one copy.
Yeah, there you go.
And
it's a call to action.
I'm like, oh, okay. And I've been doing this for a very long time. I have a big following too, but it's one of those things that you have to realize that if they didn't know it was an option for them to do, they wouldn't know how to act on it. So your advice to all the listeners is I think is very valuable. And your story definitely, you know, illustrates that very well. So I want to thank you again, Joe, for being here on Someone Gets Me with me and taking all this time out of your day, all of your busy day to share your story and all of this great information.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Diane. And I always, look forward to talking with you and hearing things, you know, about your travels and the way that you help other people, I think is really, it's really awesome how you help people and help them, you know, get to where they want to be.
Cool. Thank you so much. So you've been listening to Joe Rady of Rady Rides. Check him out on YouTube and all around. He's really an amazing guy. You've heard about him. So remember, everybody, to keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You're a rock star and you're here on purpose. So go out there and make some noise and live your vision with passion. Until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.